Right, let's get going, I think. Good morning, everybody. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner with NPM Legal. We're a specialist employment and business immigration practice based in England, but we work with clients who are all over the world. They have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK. I am delighted to be joined this morning by my colleague, Adrienne. Morning, Adrienne.
Morning. I love the way you say every week you're delighted. It makes me feel so good to start the session.
I am always delighted. I will say as well that the session has been recorded. We do host these on our website afterwards and also on our Spotify channel where you can access all of our other episodes too. So if you haven't checked those out, please do. Today, we welcome questions. As always, it's going to be quite a snappy session this morning. Hopefully, we will be done by 11:30. We will try and answer questions as we go along. If you would like to ask us a question, and please just ask away, and we'll just deal with them as we go, or we may wait and answer them at the end as we choose. But there's a Q&A function down at the bottom of the screen. So please do use the Q&A function if you want to ask us a question. It just helps us manage them a little bit more easily. Okay, so as those of you who have joined us before will know, the theme of our current 101 webinar series is the future of work. And this week, we're moving things along in our new remote working hybrid world to look at what extra efforts are actually needed when it comes to remote management and, in particular, remote performance management. We all know that it's difficult enough sometimes to manage somebody when they're sitting next to you in an office. They've got their workload, the manager has their workload. But it's a big trap to fall into, I think, that this conflation of presence with performance, and that's something that causes an issue of itself.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, we seem to be getting asked the question more and more. Like, we've taken this person on who's working remotely. They've only been with us a few months. It's not really working out. Can we just get rid of them? And it's really tempting just to turn around and go, yeah, haven't got 2 years service, that's it, off you go. But Peter and I have been thinking more about this, not only really from the perspective of how we would advise, because we can come on to the legal issues in a minute, but we've also tried to put ourselves in the position of having to manage somebody remotely. And just to think about sort of some tips and tricks about maybe just how to set it up from the start so that you don't end up having to phone your lawyers, pay our fees to give you some advice on it. But obviously, we want you all to do that just so that we are really clear. Otherwise, we won't have any jobs and we'll be very cold. Anyway, I thought I'd just do the boring bit to start with. And as a reminder, first of all, let's just recap on the legal part, which I've kind of just already touched on. So obviously, most of you will know this already, but only those with over 2 years service have the right to claim unfair dismissal. So poor performance, which is probably what we're talking about, comes under the heading of capability and is one of the fair reasons for dismissal, with the others being things like misconduct, redundancy and stuff. But and obviously, and with anybody over 2 years service, you still have to follow a proper process in order to defend an unfair dismissal claim. But, and this is a huge but, from our experience, we're seeing increasingly employees trying to claim something to get them around the fact that they don't have the 2 years service. And one of the sort of like the key trends on this is usually grounds of mental health issues, which obviously has become a lot more common since COVID, which has been really, really tough on a lot of people. But, you know, the employees, I think it's fair to say, will be looking at whether or not they can leverage other protected characteristics as a way to, frankly, get some money and so to tide them over. So probably a bit more cautious now. I've certainly become a bit more cautious in my advice and a lot less gung-ho, where I'd be saying, you know, it would be sensible to have some kind of process. And I'm not talking about a full BIP plan lasting months necessarily, but really just to make sure that if there are performance issues, that the employee, and I think I've used this phrase so many times before, is kind of taken on the journey so that it's dealt with at an early stage. And then you do have some kind of termination process if you do decide to dismiss when somebody is what we call short service.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I my experience over the last year has been that I have seen more and more employees, when we're talking about performance management issues, go into their employer and saying, "Look, I'm just really stressed. I'm so stressed I can't work, so I have a fit note for this." And the employer is saying, "Well, you haven't been performing very well." And I just can't help but think that what we're dealing with is a direct knock-on from the pandemic and problems that people had during that time are really sort of manifesting themselves now. And you know, I can think of two or three specific scenarios that we've been asked to support with where we've got super short-serving employees. But there are some quite complex mental health type difficulties in the background, and a real conflict with the employer just saying the individual just can't cope with the demands of the job. But we're not being unreasonable in terms of the demands that we're actually putting in place. We think that, you know, ordinarily pre-pandemic, we never had anybody having any type of issues with doing the sort of work that we're doing, but now we're meeting resistance on it. So I'd just be really interested to know if any of the participants want to share. Obviously, we're not going to divulge company names, you know, if you're somebody that we know. But feel free to put it in the chat at the bottom, or as I said at the outset, if you've got a question about this, then please use the Q&A function at the bottom and we'll address them as well. We're not going to open anybody's microphone up or anything like that. We can keep them anonymous. But yeah, I mean, it's just something that I've really, really noticed in the past 12 months. But taking it all back a stage, I think let's start at that natural starting point, which is the beginning, where all things should start, and just see how you can kind of put yourself in a position where you're set up for success, really, and you're equipped to be able to deal with the challenges if you're in a scenario where you've got this conflict of performance and other challenges to meet as well. So thinking about at it in terms of a legal risk perspective. And I always like, you know, to go back to basics. And I think going back to basics at the start of an employment relationship starts with probationary periods. Now, probationary periods is something that there was a school of thought on certainly my LinkedIn feed not so long ago, where people were saying, what's the point in probationary periods? We don't really need them. I mean, somebody needs 2 years' service to be able to bring an unfair dismissal claim, as Adrienne has said. But actually, probationary periods, I think, are really, really useful because you can make it clear that it is a time to set expectations. It's a time where there can be a greater degree of scrutiny of performance. And I'm not saying that it has to be some super tough management period by any stretch of the imagination, but I think having that 3 or 6 month window where the employees know that actually there is a probationary period, there is perhaps a shorter notice period during probation. The employer can be really super specific in terms of what their expectations for performance should be during that time. But crucially, it is incumbent on you as employers to actually follow through and make sure that you're using that probationary period as it should be used. Because I think all too often, I know you'll identify with this, Adrienne, we have those conversations where performance concerns haven't been addressed at all. And that also goes hand in hand with getting to the end of a probationary period where we get the call. This person hasn't been very good. We hired them 6 months ago. We want to know what our options are in terms of releasing them. There is a probationary period in the contract, but there's just been no discussion, appraisals, performance feedback given whatsoever. And it always strikes me as a little bit of a missed opportunity. So yeah, put yourself in the shoes of your new starters. What sort of systems do they need to get used to? Make sure your onboarding actually helps them with hitting the ground running. I think that's really, really important. So are you covering all the basics there?
Yeah,
And you
one of
can
the things, sorry,
yeah.
just going to jump in there. And I think what will be really useful, and I think it's a change in mindset, particularly with the remote working, is that the probationary period should be a two-way street. So it's for the employee to prove themselves, but it's also for the company to use that time to make sure that they are set up for success. I mean, I saw a fantastic quote on LinkedIn last night, and I really should have looked it up and credited the person who's posted it. And I'm sorry I haven't done that. But it said, you can't expect 100% performance with 1% 10% of training. So, you know, if you cast your mind back to the days when you had people into the office, you would do a full-on induction. You know, here's this old school stationery cupboard, here's how our systems work. You know, it's an awful lot easier. You've got to think about how you translate that to put that into place in the probationary period. So I think it's remembering that part, that incumbence on the employer that Peter was talking about, is not something that should be overlooked.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Well, I think hand in hand with that, in terms of the 100% performance, 1% training, is what are the objectives? You know, are you communicating effectively? I suppose that's a tangential issue, but are you communicating effectively what the objectives are? Do you even know yourself what the objectives are for your new starter? Are you giving them clear enough objectives? So you're avoiding that situation where you're having a difficult conversation with someone and they're saying, well, actually, no one's really told me what I should be doing exactly. I think I know what I should be doing, but clearly what I have been doing hasn't been what you're expecting me to do. And that's why we've got this issue, perhaps. So have some clear objectives from the word go. Keep those up to date as a relationship progresses as well. Now, to help with that, you could give somebody a mentor, perhaps a more senior person on the team, someone that they can go to for answers to the questions that they'd normally ask the person sitting next to them at the office. Remember, we're talking about hybrid or remote workers here. So in terms of that mentor relationship, it could be that you have regular check-ins. They're coming into an office environment and they can see their mentor at that moment in time. But if it's a full remote working role, they're totally absent from the office, they're working from wherever they choose to work, fantastic. How is that line of communication with a mentor actually going to work? I mean, I think there are lots of tools out there, be it using something like Slack, be it just using Zoom or a Teams call for periodic check-ins, but there are really useful tools out there that can help with that mentor relationship as well. And that's something that is super, super useful. I mean, you obviously need the buy-in from the mentor, it's their time, but it can definitely prevent problems in the long run, I think.
Mm. What about training for somebody who's looking to make the step into management as well, to be a mentor and to, you know, to be helpful, because, you know, new starters are always going to be terrified of asking what they might think are silly questions. You know, they would normally pop their head up above their desk and go, this is a daft question, but, you know, and to actually, you know, to feel like they've got someone to turn to ask those questions, I think is super important. But I mean, I think when you're talking about having those sort of regular check-ins, you know, between manager and new starter, I think it's also worthwhile just thinking about, you know, being some of them being positive ones, like really like what you did there, you know, how's everything going, so that you're working on building that relationship and not just going, right, let's look at this objective and let's review where you are. It's, you know, it's got to be that relationship building when it comes to check-ins as well. And I just think having that is super important. It also helps to build the regular contact between manager and employee, because obviously that's really difficult when you're remote. But I mean, a lot of companies obviously are doing hybrid. So, I mean, we've got some thoughts on this, and it may not work in the commercial world. So forgive us if it's something that is a bit of a gold standard. But again, a lot of commentary that we see is how days in the office actually are run. So, you know, make them count. Think about what your objective is. If you're saying you want people in the office, you know, 2 days a week, think about how are you going to best put that to use? And to my mind, if we're talking about collaboration and, you know, making, you know, gelling as a team, then think about what you can do to help that along its way, bearing in mind you've got limited time in the week. So, you know, might there be more of an emphasis on the social elements, you know, thinking team breakfasts or team lunches, or, you know, there's nothing worse for the employee who's done their hour and a half commute or whatever it is, only to find that they sit at a desk in the office and they're on Teams or Zoom calls all day next to other people who are on team calls and Zoom calls all day. And then, you know, they're left with the feeling of, well, you know, what's the bloody point in me being here? Might as well do this at home in my pajamas.
Or something you mentioned last week, or 2 weeks ago, which was getting people into the office, but then other kind of key stakeholders or individuals are actually not in the office that day. So that element of coordination is actually missing.
Yeah. So it takes quite a bit of planning, I think.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as going, hey, let's advertise a role and pay shed loads to a recruitment consultant, which is the other aspect as to why you might want this to be successful. It's, you know, it does take some planning, but then arguably so does having new starters in the office in person anyway. But
yeah, without a doubt. Something else that occurred to me, which kind of ties in with what you were just saying before, actually, in terms of the feedback, is rewarding great performance. Because I think, I mean, maybe we get a slanted view, because when people are talking to us about performance management, often it's in the context of, or more, actually pretty much all the time, it's in the context of, this person isn't performing and we need a strategy here, and can you help us out of a hole that we're in? But actually, rewarding great performance in some way is just a really good motivational tool, I think. I mean, speaking from experience of teams that I've worked in, particular cases that I've been involved in as well, where, you know, as a kind of independent observer, you can see that actually where there isn't as much focus on the good performance, but the focus is on the negative performance, then that itself can cause certain issues for the relationship. And, you know, it doesn't all have to be about financial reward either, of course. I mean, simply saying thank you, job well done, periodically can be sufficient. But I know there are a lot of innovative ways that that companies are coming up with. I mean, certainly in terms of hybrid workers, to make people feel included and to reward good performance when it's seen as well. No doubt some of you attending have got some really good good creative ideas there about how to do that.
Yeah, share them with us.
Let us know.
And then we can take them to our boss and go, hey, somebody came up with this great idea. Can you do this for us, please?
and the flip side of that, of course, is the bit that we're always involved in, which is, look, this person isn't performing. So let's just talk a little bit about that. I think one of the biggest issues that we see is not addressing performance concerns promptly. That's kind of like such a catalyst, I think, for other problems. Now, if we're talking about it in the context of someone who is what we call short service, so they're under the 2 years continuous employment, and I should have said at the outset, we're talking to you on the 8th of December 2022, so for the purposes of Spotify, so the law as it stands right now may change in the future. Someone's got less than 2 years service, then you've got a bit more leeway in terms of ordinary unfair dismissal rights. But like Adrienne outlined at the start, there are a whole bunch of rights that we call day one rights, most notably in this sort of context, discrimination. Now, not addressing performance concerns promptly is really just storing up an issue for another time. And if the person's short service, well, yeah, they're not going to come to you and bring an unfair dismissal claim, an ordinary unfair dismissal claim, but they will may try and leverage their lack of short service by relying on some kind of protected characteristic. So it's not a get out of jail free card for you. And really what it means in practice is, you know, before you get to the point where you're having to phone your friendly employment lawyer and say, hey, we've got a bit of an issue here, it's don't wait for a probationary period to pass or for 3 months to go by without saying or doing anything. If we go back to these basics again, we look at what ACAS say, for example, about resolving issues in the workplace. Their guidance always seems to be prefaced with something along the lines of clear lines of communication, intervening at an early stage in an informal way is often the best way of preventing a problem actually escalating into something more formal. So you could save yourself a lot of effort and heartache later if you're just having these informal feedback discussions and really pinning down any issues of underperformance at a very, very early stage. The worst that's going to happen if you do that is when you get into a formal process, because there hasn't been any improvements at all, you're going to be able to refer to the informal discussions. It's going to make you look really reasonable and really responsible as an employer if you're having to justify your actions to a third party, i.e. employment judge, at a later date. I would hope you'd never get into that scenario. But I think starting those discussions at a really, really early stage doesn't have to be in the framework of a formal performance management process at all. Just informal feedback to start with will absolutely work wonders. Now, you've obviously got to think about how that ties in with hybrid or fully remote working as well. Now, it may be that you will require someone to come in the office more or a place of work more, so that person's manager can actually support them better. And that's not uncommon. I've seen that used quite a bit, actually. So, yes, you might be working one day a week from the office. We'd actually like you to come in 2 days a week, so we're actually able to support you a bit more with these concerns or with these objectives or with this particular project, whatever it is, really. Mm. What do you think about that, Adrienne?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And I think, again, taking it back a stage, I think it's often something to think about right as far back as your recruitment process, because one of the questions that we've been asked is, how do we get somebody to come into the office if we're concerned about their performance? Yeah. And, you know, and that is really, really tricky, because you've recruited them on the basis that they are a remote worker and they've taken the job because they live 4 hours away and all the rest of it. And that's why I think actually having that conversation with your talent team that are interviewing people, saying, yeah, this absolutely is a remote role. However, you know, it may be that to help you be successful, certainly on a, you know, for a temporary basis or at an early stage, we might ask you to come into the office so that you can get the support that you need to be successful. So, you know, the message from the start is, we can ask you to do this. I mean, that's the sort of, like, the comes back to your clear line of communications. It may also be something, and Peter and I were discussing this before, and Peter said, you know, look at what's in your contract. What do we say in the contract? Do we have the right in that to make them come in if we feel that that's justified?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you missed our session 2 weeks ago, we were looking at this concept of a trend we're seeing, which is businesses coming to us and saying, we've had 2 years of permanent remote working. We actually need our employees to come back to the office more than they are at the moment. Perhaps they just want to come back in 1 day a week. We'd like them to come back in 2 or 3 days a week. So check out that webinar if you want some tips about how to manage that, both legally and practically. But it's a related point here. There is a potential legal issue in terms of mandating fully remote workers coming into the office. But these things can be addressed through the employment contract. It can be addressed through the like a hybrid working policy is what I'm thinking of in particular. So they're useful tools that you can rely on.
I was just going to say that, you know, just in terms of a checklist, if you do find yourselves picking up the phone to your friendly employment lawyers, you know, these are going to be some of the questions that we would ask you. Mm. We would say to you, first of all, are there any protected characteristics that we need to take into account? Okay, whether that's due to the risk of discrimination or in terms of disability, it's about our knowledge of the disability. So, you know, have they told you that they suffer from any disability where they might need adjustments? But also, should you reasonably have known that they have some kind of disability? So that can be extremely difficult to pinpoint. But say, for example, let's just use dyslexia as an example. If someone's dyslexic, you may well have picked up in their written communications that there might be some support that's needed there. They haven't actually told you, but if you can see it in their written communications and that's something that you wanted to take them to task over, that would be a red flag to consider whether or not, you know, that would count as knowledge of that disability. So that's going to be the first bank of questions that we ask. The second will be exactly what we've just been banging on about, is give us some information about what discussions have been had about their performance, because what we will say to you is, we need a hook on which to hang this discussion. So you're going to have some kind of meeting with them if you've decided to terminate. And we want to be really clear that the reason for termination has got nothing to do with anything other than performance. And if you've got, yep, here's a couple of emails where we've backed up discussions, we've had these discussions, we've given them clear objectives, we are going to dance around the office and say, we can actually help you. And then we can craft into it saying, as you're aware, we've had these concerns, this is where we're at, really sorry it's not working out, because here's examples of how those concerns have not been improved. You know, all the very best. So that's why it's so important, if you do end up coming to us, that you're giving us some information that we can then craft and turn into hopefully a scenario where we can make it smooth and easy for you.
Yeah, and if you haven't got that, we might suck our teeth a little bit. We might talk to you a little bit more about the risk. But where there's a will, there's a way.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. we like to make things happen. Yeah. Just a question of risk. And don't feel alone if you haven't got the whole bank of evidence to support it. Because I would say of those types of discussions that I have, it's a lot more common for there to be really ad hoc kind of intermittent evidence of poor performance being dealt with than those occasions where we get something which is really, really well structured. Unless, yeah, of course, you're coming to us and saying, look, can you actually help us assess the reasonableness of this performance improvement plan in the first place, which we do get involved in those sorts of discussions as well, thankfully.
But I mean, we can come up with anything. If you come to us and say this person's not performing, even if you haven't addressed it, if you can say, here's why they're not performing, this is their job, this is what they haven't done, it's really clear. That's enough to be able to have the conversation. What we're talking about is just trying to make your life a little bit easier by dealing with it from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, fast forwarding then to the end of the employment relationship, as Adrian said at the outset, capability is a reason that constitutes a fair reason to dismiss under the Employment Rights Act. That's subject to following a fair process, so on and so forth. And of course, an assessment that we make is whether or not the individual's got the benefit of the protection of that part of the Employment Rights Act in the first place, depending on their length of service. But assuming you get to the point where you've decided that relationship absolutely cannot continue, despite your best efforts, perhaps in terms of trying to manage performance, and the individual just isn't going to get it, and they actually end up leaving, what happens next? Well, it's all too easy just to move on, hire somebody else, rinse and repeat that scenario, which I have seen before, sadly. But actually, what about a wash up, just to reflect on, actually, why did we get into that scenario in the first place? So can you go back and revisit your recruitment processes? Can you go back and look at your onboarding processes? Actually, was remote working or hybrid working right for this specific role in the first place? I mean, interestingly, we've been having quite a few discussions with businesses where they are all too open to adopting that model of working, but they've identified that for very specific roles, it just doesn't work. And I'm not talking about in a manufacturing environment, for example, where you have to have people on site using certain machinery, also within an office or professional environment as well. And you are able, you know, you can set the rules, you're in control as the employer, and you are able to have a divergence of treatment between roles in your workforce as well. So don't be too concerned about that. But I think looking back and just figuring out what could have been done differently will save money, save legal risk, save time, cost, all that good stuff going forwards as well.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, we said we try and keep it to 11:30 today. We've had a question in, so thanks for the question, which is, sorry, I'm late here. That's okay. Jumping in on a question, which sounds like knowledge of disability. Question is, for example, an employer has ADHD. Can we as an employer request medical evidence? So far, we've been supporting with reasonable adjustments due to poor performance and a PIP plan with agreed targets.
I've got several cases on, well, or matters where I'm supporting clients with exactly this, and it is incredibly difficult, but absolutely yes. I think that you, once you're aware or you have concerns that somebody might have a disability, then you've got to have A, an open discussion with that person, and B, I would absolutely get some medical evidence, whether that's occupational health. Although I hesitate to say occupational health, specifically with some of what we call the neurodivergent stuff, because very often the occupational health providers are actually not geared up to be able to assess properly somebody's particular needs. So, but definitely some kind of medical evidence or specialist report, so that you can be really clear on what support that you're giving the employee. And the reason I say this is, God forbid you end up before an employment tribunal, a judge will expect you to have taken some kind of specialist advice, so that you can then be sure that the reasonable adjustments you're putting in place are appropriate for that particular person.
Yeah, Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sorry, I'm ever so sorry. I'm going to have to jump off.
You've got to dive off because you've got
a
call.
I've got to dive off. I've got a call. I'm ever so sorry. Thanks ever so much, guys.
Bye, Adrian. I'm sticking around just for a few minutes to wrap up. Fiona has helpfully commented that she's using Genius for workplace assessments for ADHD. So that's a good tip. I don't know that company, so I'm going to write that name down and check it out myself. So thank you, Fiona. Hope you've enjoyed today's session. Thank you so much for joining us. Before I go, I'll just say we're having a break over the Christmas period now. We're going to be back on the 12th of January 2023. My colleague Victoria plus a special external guest are going to be looking at the tax and immigration considerations of working from anywhere. Again, another hot topic. So please do join us for that one on the 12th of January. It will be at the same time as well, 11 o'clock. If you've signed up and registered for this webinar, then you're automatically registered for our future ones in this particular series. So you just need to log in at that time. Otherwise, thank you for joining today. Thank you for your questions. Please do spread the word about our webinars. The more, the merrier that join us. And we'll see you in the new year. Have a great Christmas.